This is the Future of HR Podcast, episode 90.
They write down, what's the biggest challenge in your job today? People write it down. Skill-based organization, whatever they say, hybrid work, leadership, a culture, put so that behind it. If that challenge resolution doesn't lead so that, and the legacy is so that our strategy happens. Strategy is a mirror. Look in strategy. We're going to innovate. We're going to blah, blah, blah. I think strategy should be a window, not a mirror. And the window says, look to your customer, look to your investor, look outside the firm. I'm going to do leadership so that our investors give us a price earnings premium. So it builds confidence. I'm going to do innovation so that our customers have a higher net promoter score. They buy more products. When HR is not about HR, but about creating value in that marketplace outside, that's where the ultimate excitement comes for me.
What does the research say when it comes to developing leaders? Why is there a knowing-doing gap when it comes to implementing talent management practices? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR Podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career to the next level. Hey everyone, today is a very special episode as we are joined by three legends in our field. But before I introduce today's amazing guests, I want to take a moment and thank our sponsors for their support of the podcast. First, I want to thank Biz Library. Biz Library is the place where learning happens and is an industry leader in high-quality, off-the-shelf content that solves your compliance needs, supports the upskilling of your teams, and will help your leaders to lead. If you're looking to elevate learning development in your organization, I recommend giving Biz Library a call. Second, I want to thank our newest sponsor, Deeper Signals. Deeper Signals is a modern scientific assessments platform that is revolutionizing the way organizations measure, manage, and develop their talent. I'm a big, big fan of their assessments because they accurately assess personality, motivation, and competencies in just 7 minutes. But don't take my word for it. You can try Deeper Signals Core Drivers Assessment for free. You go to deepersignals.com/futurepod, that's /future, P-O-D, and take the core drivers assessment for free. And with that, I'm excited to introduce Dave Ulrich, Bob Eichinger, and Alan Church. But before I introduce them, I want to let you know how this conversation came about. Dave, Bob, Alan, and a fourth author, Roger Perlman, recently wrote a terrific and important article called Why Talent Management and Succession Bench Building Aren't Working Today, at least not as well as they could. After I read this article, I knew that future HR listeners would benefit from not only reading this article, but just hearing more about their ideas. And so I reached out to Alan. And thanks to Alan, we were able to pull off this incredible conversation today. Now back to introductions. Dave is known as the father of modern HR. Dave's research, writing, and consulting has had an immeasurable impact on our field. Over his career, he has published over 200 articles and book chapters and written over 30 books. And while he has an amazing list of accomplishments, and they are truly impressive, what's always impressed me about Dave is his generosity and his passion for helping to elevate our field. And he also has an amazing LinkedIn newsletter. So if you're not subscribed to that, be sure you do that right after listening to our conversation. And to make it easy for you to subscribe to Dave's newsletter, I put a link in the show notes. And also you can find a link to their talent management article. Now you likely know Bob Eichinger as the co-founder and CEO of Lominger International. Bob and his co-founder Michael Lombardo founded the competency movement based upon their work at the Center for Creative Leadership. Bob and Michael are also known as the fathers of learning agility based upon their decades of research. Bob has authored over 50 books, articles, software products, and other intellectual property around the topic of talent management and succession planning. And it is fair to say that we should thank Bob for many of the talent and leadership practices we use today. And if you're in talent management or aspire to be, make sure you read The Leadership Machine that he wrote with Michael Lombardo. This is one of the best books on talent management ever written. Last but not least is Alan Church. Alan's a thought leader and one of the foremost experts in the world on talent management. Recently, Alan has co-founded Mastro Consulting, where he works with Fortune 500 companies to identify, build, and strengthen talent pipelines. And prior to launching his own consultancy, Alan was the SVP Global Talent Management for PepsiCo, where he had an amazing 21-year career. Alan's authored several books, over 30 book chapters, and 150 articles. I'm thankful to Alan for helping to coordinate today's conversation and his friendship. In my conversation with Dave, Bob, and Alan, we discuss why skills-based organizations are an incomplete method of talent management, how to think about and define leadership potential, why HR leaders need to be asking what leadership do we need, not now, but in the future, the reasons why organizations struggle to develop a leadership bench, and how talent management professionals can elevate their impact. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Drop me a line on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with three legends in our field. Dave, Bob, Alan, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are all three of you doing?
Great.
Doing well.
Great.
Well, this is exciting to have this much horsepower on one call, so much knowledge about talent management, HR, to have three industry legends and experts. I'm excited about this. And we're going to jump right in to Bob. I've got a question for you, Bob. You are known really probably best for starting the competency movement with Michael Lombardo, creating the Lominger competency model, which is the gold standard, if not almost every competency model has been built on. And so I've got to ask you, what do you think about skills and skills-based organizations versus competencies? What's the real on this?
Well, competencies are made up of what we call KSAs. There's a knowledge component, a skills component, and an attribute component. So the skills movement is fine. Those that are moving to the skills marketplace are missing the attribute piece primarily. So there's nothing wrong with skill. Skills are wonderful. Skills are incompetencies. But you got to be careful to make sure the knowledge and wisdom component is in it and the attribute, personality, style, values. It's an incomplete method of talent management.
Interesting, because I always feel like it's old wine and new bottle. In thinking about we're rebranding competencies now as skills, and people want to become skills-based organizations, but you're saying really we are missing the knowledge and the attributes piece.
Well, especially if you look at derailment, 96% of derailment comes from non-skill issues, primarily attributes, EQ and interpersonal transactional style. So if you're doing just skills movement, you're going to miss derailment.
That's a really great point and statistic. Dave, your perspective on skills and competencies and what people may or may not be getting right around this?
Bob is the expert, and I'll defer to Bob's data, but I'll have one thought. I think our field has a habit of recycling, not respiraling. Recycling means you take something old, you put a new, you called it old wine in new bottles, and we should cycle forward. My sense is the forward cycle is not just knowledge, skills, and abilities. Attributes. I'm sorry, Bob. Attributes. I got it wrong. Knowledge, skills, and attributes that will help us be successful in the marketplace. The old competence model was here's 30 people who did well. Here's 30 people who were average. What are their differences? I'd rather say, where is our business going with our customers, our investors, our markets? What set of knowledge, what set of skills, what set of attributes will help us get to the future? That's spiraling forward, not recycling. I see right now, most of the skills movement that I see is simply recycling and not a very innovative way.
Really good point. And Dave, sticking with you, you know, when I think about, there's so much you are well known for, but when I think about it, Dave Ulrich, the first thing that comes to my mind is outside in. And one of the ways that I think you have done a brilliant job of really making that message so clear is using the question, so that. And I wonder if you could talk more about why that so that question is so powerful and why more HR leaders need to be asking themselves that question as they design processes.
Let me do it in a case study. I did a session yesterday. Write down, what's the biggest challenge in your job today? People write it down. Skill-based organization, whatever they say, hybrid work, leadership, a culture, put so that behind it. If that challenge resolution doesn't lead so that, and the legacy is so that our strategy happens. Strategy is a mirror. Look in strategy. We're going to innovate. We're going to blah, blah, blah. I think strategy should be a window, not a mirror. And the window says, look to your customer, look to your investor, look outside the firm. I'm going to do leadership so that our investors give us a price earnings premium. So it builds confidence. I'm going to do innovation so that our customers have a higher net promoter score. They buy more products. When HR is not about HR, but about creating value in that marketplace outside, that's where the ultimate excitement comes for me.
That is honestly so important. And I think more people have to ask that question so that and frame it that way, because that's when you get the ROI. That's when the business understands what we're doing. When we focus on HR activities, we're missing the point by a long shot.
So JP, I'm going to intervene. I know you're going to go to Alan. You're doing this show, this podcast, Future of HR, not for you. So that what? How would you answer that?
So that we can develop better, more business-focused, next-generation HR leaders.
Cool. Notice the outcome is not a narcissistic outcome. We have too much of that in leadership. The outcome is that leaders who listen will be more able to adapt to the world in which they don't know yet. That's the value of the so that questions. It looks forward, not backward, and outside in. Okay, sorry to take away from Alan's question. I look forward to the answer.
I love it, Dave. Well, Alan, you know, obviously, thank you for also helping us facilitate this conversation. I know you pulled some favors to get Dave and Bob on the call with you because you guys wrote a great article we're going to talk about. But you're known for a lot of things, and probably one is around potential. And the work you did at Pepsi, you guys built a leadership potential blueprint and then the Great Five model. Tell us more about kind of those two approaches to potential and what people should be taking away from that.
Thanks again for having me. I guess I did okay the last time because I'm back. So that's a good thing. Yeah, I think in building on Dave's comments a bit, and we can come back to the skill thing for Pop because I have some thoughts there. But the leadership potential blueprint is the core, if you will, I'd say core KSAs holistically of potential, right? So that's based on analysis of 50 years of data and other articles, including stuff that both these guys wrote in the past. Bob, a lot of learning agility obviously is in there. And that's sort of the model, if you will, that any organization can use to think about potential holistically, right? So it's the foundational stuff, the cognitive personality, the growth, which is learning agility and motivation. And then the career, which is relationships and how you think about leadership competencies more broadly, as well as functional, right? So the functional stuff, Dave, to your point, is really potential for what? So at some level, do you have the foundation? Are you smart enough, strategic enough, and do you have a holistically good personality? Can you learn from experiences? Do you want those experiences? Will you take advantage of them? And then do you have the leadership skills we can train you on? And do you have the functional knowledge that's going to put you in the right C-suite job? So that's the core. But JP, that's not what we assess directly at PepsiCo, and it's not what I'm assessing in any of the clients I'm working with now. That's the underpinning, right? That's the theory. What we assess is more what Dave's talking about, which is we go in and we talk about, and this is the Great Five at PepsiCo too, what competencies, what leadership do we need to have for the future to be successful as a business, to continue to grow based on the strategy, based on market interpretation of what's happening and trends? Those competencies are always forward-looking. So I don't really like to do assessment based on what got you here. I don't like to do assessment based on the current model. My push is really, what are you not good at today that you need to get better at? So it's always done through custom interviews with senior leaders. And the Great Five is very much like that, to the point that two of the five dimensions, and I won't mention which ones because I'm not there anymore, so I can't officially give away that information, but two of the five dimensions in the Great Five don't score that well in the company. And it's not like it's all strength for them, right? And it's partly because there's a need and a desire on the part of leadership, which is fantastic, to assess and develop against all of them to deliver success. It's a combination of what we know from research, as well as what's practical and applied to the organization based on their business needs. To me, that's the sweet spot, because nobody's going to care about, I was just doing some assessments last week. I'm not going to give somebody their cognitive score, nor do I want anybody using that in a talent discussion. However, it's good as an underlying variable to assess and help predict something around strategic thinking that they want to focus on, or Dave, outside in, right? Because there's a relationship there between how you think about things, how you process data, and whether or not you're a strategic thinker and you're expansive.
One of the threads of this podcast is that there are years and years and years of research and science that backs up our field, and we ignore it a lot. I will link in the show notes to the work at Pepsi, because there's great articles that can give you more information around that that you did. But I do want to give you a shot, Alan, to talk about skills-based organizations and your point of view.
Yeah, we were talking about this before we started, JP. The skills movement is great and exciting, but I really am not a fan. Partly because I lived through it at PepsiCo with the whole energy on it, and they may still be doing it, I don't know. And I even lived through the talent marketplace implementing one of those, which I think is a great concept. But the problem is multiple fold. Bob got at some of these elements. To me, as a TM person inside a company for a lot of my career, I would have to be the person who designs this stuff and implements it and sells it. So let's step back. The concept is great. The idea that you can actually identify the KSAs for a series of jobs that are valid, that you can defend in court, takes some work. Bob, I know you've done it. Dave, I'm sure you've done it in your past. But it's not like you can sit down with a bunch of professionals in the room and just get it right. And if you're making decisions based on that, you're opening yourself up for all kinds of risks to the company. There's the issue there. And I just had somebody call me yesterday, actually, and they said, you know, hey, Al, what do you think about this? And I said, well, do you have job descriptions that are valid for all your jobs? Do you even have capability content for your functions? No, not really. We have something, but it's not very good. And so, okay, that's number one. Number two, even if you got all that and you spent the money, do it well, the good old IO psychology approach, how are you going to assess it? Are you comfortable assessing people on this in a way that's not just self-report? Because if you tell people, I'm going to base your future on how you score on your own skills, they're going to give them all fives. And that's not valid either. That's not useful. Those two problems alone are issues. And then the third one is, how do you manage a day-to-day organization that is not focused on some jobs that deliver things versus just skills? We drew about this actually a bit. I could see the skill thing maybe working in IT, maybe working in some parts of the health profession, medical profession, et cetera, where there's very targeted skills that do things. I can't see taking apart regular corporate jobs or regular complex jobs and breaking them up and having things work the same way. It just doesn't make sense to me. I think there's a lot of energy because people think it's cool and the next big thing, even though it's been around for 50 years. But I don't think it works.
Hey, everyone. After a quick break, we'll be right back to our conversation with Dave, Bob, and Alan. I'm excited to announce the Future of HR podcast is now sponsored by Deeper Signals. If you are a fan of the Future of HR, then you know that I believe the organization with the best talent wins. So how do you ensure that you are selecting and developing the talent that will help your organization to win? The answer lies in using a scientific, data-driven approach to assessing and developing your talent, and that's where Deeper Signals comes in. Deeper Signals is a modern scientific assessment platform that is revolutionizing the way organizations measure, manage, and develop their talent. Why am I such a big fan of Deeper Signals? Well, first, traditional personality assessments are often unscientific, time-consuming, and fail to provide practical and actionable insights. But Deeper Signals is different. It's built on 50 years of psychological research and powered by advanced machine learning. Deeper Signals provides HR leaders with insights and tools they need to identify, develop, and retain the best talent in the game. With Deeper Signals, you can accurately assess personality, motivation, and competencies in just 7 minutes. You can generate personalized action plans and development journeys that equip leaders, individuals, and teams with the insights needed to improve onboarding, help them grow, and increase their overall performance. You can take your selection, onboarding, and development processes to the next level with Deeper Signals. And the best part, Deeper Signals is affordable, user-friendly, and scalable, making it accessible to organizations of all sizes. No wonder over 400,000 people from over 140 countries have completed their assessments, and companies like Caterpillar and S&P Global are loyal customers. But don't just take my word for it. You can try Deeper Signals Core Drivers Assessment for yourself. Go to deepersignals.com/futurepod, that's future P-O-D, and take the Core Drivers Assessment for free. It's normally $65 per assessment, but Deeper Signals has agreed to give Future of HR listeners this limited time opportunity to try the assessment risk-free. So what are you waiting for? Go to deepersignals.com/futurepod, P-O-D, and complete the 7-minute Core Drivers Assessment. I know you'll be impressed with the results. And with deeper signals, you'll have the scientific, data-driven approach you need to select, onboard, and develop the talent that'll help your organization to win today and into the future. The Institute for the Future recently came out with a report that said 85% of jobs that will exist in 2030 haven't been invented yet. While I can't predict the future, I am certain that the only way to future-proof your career is by learning to learn. This applies to our organizations as well, and as HR leaders, our job is to ensure our team members have the skills and capabilities needed now and in the future. This is why I'm excited to announce the Future of HR podcast is now sponsored by Biz Library. Biz Library is the place where learning happens. They're your one-stop shop for all of your compliance, upskilling needs, and leadership development challenges. Biz Library is an industry leader for high-quality, off-the-shelf content that will solve your compliance needs, support the upskilling of teams, and will help your leaders to lead. If you're looking to elevate learning in your organization, give Biz Library a call as they can support you with their innovative L&D platforms, best-in-class content, and unrivaled strategic support. And if you mention that JP at the Future of HR podcast sent you, you'll receive a 10% discount on year one of your Biz Library contract. So head on over to bizlibrary.com and see how they can help you to elevate learning in your organization today. All three of you got together and wrote an article, Talent Management, What's Not Working and How We Can Fix It, which I think is a fascinating and must-read article and really the genesis for this conversation. And I'm going to go back to you, Alan, just because when we talk about talent management, can you just level set and how you define talent management? Because that's another word that people start to throw everything into. And after a while, it almost doesn't mean anything because we just use it for learning development, succession planning, org effectiveness, right? Everything starts to get inside that group. So how do you think about talent management?
Yeah, some people have even think it's the new term for all of HR, which is total garbage. Could be. Talent management is the process of identifying, assessing, developing, planning, and moving current and future talent throughout the employee lifecycle. For me, it's very much about the planning process of talent and identifying, differentiating talent, right, and making investments versus OD, JP, which I've written a lot about too, which is more about culture and growth for everybody in the organization and effectiveness. TM is focused on, honestly, differentiation and making decisions. They're completely different in a lot of ways.
That's really helpful to have that benchmark. And Bob, talking to you about why you decided to write the article, and I'm going to give the right title because I sort of winged it before. It's Why Talent Management and Succession Bench Planning Aren't Working Today, at least not as well as they could, which I think is a good way to say it. Talk more about what made you want to write this article with these two great gentlemen.
It came out of a frustration. There is an issue that the three of us and other respected consultants get called in on, that is, it's succession planning, having a strong bench of talent to fill C-suite positions and other senior positions. And all three of us have been called into organizations saying, we have a problem. We don't have strength on the bench. As you said, there's 50 years of research. There's 50 years of practitioner anecdotal data. There's 50 years of actually running things like he and I did at PepsiCo. We have studies about what works, what doesn't work. We have best practices. It is a frustration to be paid a lot of money to come in and give a presentation and say, this problem you have, which is a serious one, David's language, what so? We don't have enough leadership on the bench. So what? We're not going to be able to flourish into the future. And David's third question is what not? If that's true, what do you do now? We leave behind the 7-step process. We give them a copy of the leadership machine and leadership pipeline. We give them all of Alan's articles that he has written, saying, if you do the following, you will flourish into the future and you will have leadership. It's a leadership development. It's a 20-year process. We know exactly how it works. As Alan said, we're getting to have a pretty good handle on what high potential is, how it can be assessed, and even how it can be developed. You can observe it. You can interview for it. You can do bio data and assess it. So we're quite excited as thought leaders that we have the answer to your biggest talent management problem. And then we leave, we get on the airplane, and they bring us back a year later for the Palm Springs offsite. And I say, what is your biggest issue? And they say, we don't have enough leadership strength on the bench. And I say, well, here's this slide I showed you 7 years. These are the seven things you need to do. How are you doing on those? Well, not so good. The four of us, along with Roger Pierman, sat down and said, well, why is that? What's happening? Is it HR's fault? Is it TM's fault? Is it line manager's fault? I can't remember the number, but we came up with X number of reasons. And there are science deniers, like there are in vaccines or climate. There are people who listen to what David and Alan and I say, and they say, I don't believe that. Everybody can be a high potential. No, they can't. Not everybody can be in the pole vault in the Olympics if they just want to. No, they can't. Then we'll talk about the simple monsters killing us in the marketplace. Bright, shiny objects like the skills movement are killing us in the marketplace. We wrote it out of frustration, hoping that the so what is that people will identify these blockages to implementing science-based talent management practices and be more successful. That's the only thing the three of us care about is our clients being more successful. And we know how to do it.
It's great that all four of you, sorry about Roger, and we'll make sure that we get his due, being part of that article is really helping think through what is slowing us down, because there's so many things we have going for us now. We have more research, we have more tools. I think we've got better professionals in general, but yet we still make a lot of the same mistakes. And we're going to get into a lot of these different points you make. So I think each of these really deserves some attention. But Dave, I'm curious from your perspective, are you seeing the same thing as Bob? And maybe what do we have going for us that's going on the positive side that is going well before we get into what we got to fix?
Let me make just a couple of real quick comments. First of all, whenever I get asked about help us with succession, I can give counsel that's so good. Bring in Bob. I've done that every time I do it. Bob has been a colleague, but also a mentor in so many ways. And Alan, I haven't worked with you as much, and I could say bring in Bob or Alan, but I think the show, What About Bob, the movie, is really capturing Bob. And so I say that in jest, but I've had Bob invited to a number of places. The clients I care the most about, I'll bring in Bob because he does well. The second thing, I think it's an issue. It's really interesting, and it's not a new problem. We know more than we do. I went to a doctor, and he did a whole bunch of stuff on my body, chirograph. And finally, he was trying to get my body aligned and all the bones, and he closed the door after having spent thousands of dollars, and he looked at me and he said, lose weight. And I said, you know, you could have told me that before I spent $5,000. I know I should lose weight. I know to do that, but I don't do it very well. I think a lot of the talent ideas, there is a science. There is a science. Some people don't accept it. I get so frustrated in this field. We had just collected data from 28,000 people. We were looking at the results, and this could have been any of us. One of the leaders in the field said, oh, I really like the data, but let me tell you what I think. And I blew up. I said, no offense, you're one of 28,000 people. There's a science in this field. Let's look at 27,000 and maybe I'll give you 10 points. Maybe you're 10 times as good, but there's data. I think we need to learn how to turn what we know into what we do in a much more disciplined way. And that's why anytime I have a chance to work with Bob or Alan or Roger, obviously I do it, but we seem to know what to do. We don't need to tell people. Use the science. Get leadership involved. Build a case for change. Build it into the systems. We know a lot of that. Build it into your five dimensions of five growth. Do a KSA, knowledge, skills, and attributes. Most people who are good know some of that. How do we help them do it? I wish I could solve that one. If I could, we'd write a book and sponsor 10 podcasts. But that's not easy. I know I should lose weight. I still don't do it very well. I know I should be nicer to people. I may not do it as well as I could. So when we can solve that, JP, we'll move forward. So that's my two comments. One, bring in Bob, turn what we know into what we do, get more disciplined at that.
And my advice, bring in Alan. So
Well, this is cool. So we have a stream. This is kind of like at a table, point at the person who should speak, and we do a circle. That's cool.
One thing, JP, can I jump in there? This is great to have both of you on there with me, because I've looked up to the two of you forever since I was yay high, right? So in the field, one of the things that I get asked a lot now, having done this even at PepsiCo, but post PepsiCo, right? Having retired for 2 years and doing consulting is, okay, we've read your stuff and we've read Bob's stuff. We've read Dave's. How do we do this? That's the question I get. When you guys had unlimited resources at PepsiCo, or Dave's got all this data and Bob's a legend, so people listen to him, right? So how do I do it, right? In my own company, I'm a TM person. I'm new. Maybe I'm not deep in TM, which is one of the things we did talk about in the article too, and we can get there, but how do I do it? And I'll sit there and talk to them about, well, change your nine box and think of different ways of talking about potential and get people to buy into data. Here's how you might do that. But they seem often very, very hard pressed to be able to take anything. They want a simple answer. They want to just say, this is what somebody says externally. And they come back to me and say, well, the CEO or the CHRO wants to do it this way. Dave, to your point. And it's just difficult because you can sit there and explain to the TM person what the right approach is. And then they might actually buy it. They might be willing to try something different, you know, mapping out learning agility on its own or mapping out perceived potential versus database potential or something. But the internal engine of HR, I don't think is very science-based, period.
I'm going to add to that. Sorry, JP, we're going to mess up your whole podcast. Oh.
No, this is the podcast.
And now I'm gonna have Bob mad at me, which is healthy because I'm going to make it simple. A lot of people I see in HR, they go into a business meeting, could be with executives, could be with a board, could be with an investment community. And they say, I'm here to fix or solve talent management, acquiring people, training people, diversity, whatever the tool, or the learning agility. Let me tell you my proposal and let's get buy-in. I think it's the wrong place to start. My sense is the first 5 to 10 minutes when we walk into that room, we don't talk about HR at all. We don't talk at all about HR. I'm here to help us get a higher price earnings ratio with our investors, a lower cost of capital. I'm here because we're losing customer share because our product development cycle is 10% behind our industry. I'm here to get more revenue from our targeted customers to go from 40% customer share to 60. I'm here to make that happen. Are you the executives willing to listen to me? And they go, well, we care about that. I have some ideas that will help make it happen. And if I can't start in HR, that's why I say HR is not about HR. It's about creating value in the marketplace. I see a lot of HR people, I think, getting well-intended. I find some HR people not well-intended. But for the most part, I think HR people are pretty well-intended, but they're misguided. I often love to say, who's your customer? The employee. Wrong. The customer is the person that takes money out of their wallet or purse and gives it to your company. Or they're the investor who invests in you. I strongly encourage your listeners, our audience, to not talk about HR.
And we all studied that in graduate school. The number one problem with HR is they don't understand the business. If you can't read and explain a 10K, you're not going to be effective in HR.
Bob, it's not impossible. I've gone into company. I don't know what it is. Good. Let's go talk to 10 finance people. What are the 20 variables this company uses to track performance? EBITDA, net present value, turns. And I put it in front of HR people and say, here's 20 words you need to learn. Frankly, if you can't learn these 20 words, you got a bigger problem. Sometimes we get scared. Bob, what was your undergraduate in? I don't know. Or Alan, I'm curious.
IO and sociology.
So how many classes in finance did you have?
Zero.
Alan, what was your undergraduate?
Yeah, psychology and sociology, zero.
Mine was English. I mean, I got a degree reading novels. And you look at it, JP, the three of us, I'm going to now make a confession. We're not the brightest bulbs in the room. There are some really 200-watt bulbs. But I can learn 20 words. It may take me a couple of weeks, but I can learn 20 vocabulary words. And then I can link what I know to those outcomes. What's net promoter score for customer? I can figure that out. Anyway, I just have a pet peeve and I get frustrated that many in our HR world are still talking about the latest and greatest hybrid work. Here's a great program. DEI, here's a great program. And they say, you don't like those programs. I love those programs so that or because they help us succeed in a marketplace. I'm sorry to get off on that pitch, but it's one that I feel pretty strongly about.
It's funny you say that, Dave, because I recently did a top 200 HR conference for someone. I did a presentation coming in for a company. And they really wanted me to focus on, yeah, how to use assessments, but how to use assessments to drive the bottom line and to drive the senior leaders that will drop the bottom line. So my storyline, unlike the typical IO presentation I might do, which is more about the content, how you build the content, was all about here's what we did and here's how it impacted the senior leaders we selected for the organization, which in turn impacted where the organization went. And to the point of picking C-suite leaders for their strategic capability were not what we had done before, whatever it might be. So very much there's interest in it, but I think the HR people were, my client who asked me to do this really wanted that. I think the HR people were a little blown away by the orientation.
You know, it's not all there. I was talking to a CHRO in a big company. This was within the last year. So when you meet with investors, what do you tell them? And she said, investors? I don't meet with investors. My takeaway is sell short. I mean, investors care about this stuff. Our research shows that up to 70, 80% of a firm's market value is intangibles. And 25 to 30% of those intangibles are people and organization stuff. I just did a cool exercise. I said, look at Coke's price earnings ratio and Pepsi's. This will make Alan feel good. Pepsi is a 25% premium. For the same dollar earned, Pepsi's getting 25% more market value. Coke's market cap. And people would say, why are you sharing this? It's private data. It's public data. Who looked it up? Coke's market cap is $200 billion. $50 billion is being lost because of their price earnings ratio. And 25% of that, 10 to 15 billion, is the way they manage their people. So if I'm at Coke, I'm going into the executives and saying, would you like to kind of collect some 10 to 15 billion in market value? And if an executive says no, then you say, well, we're going to go place you to Pepsi. No, of course I would. That's an IQ test. Hey, we got evidence. We may not get all of it. Boy, does that mindset shift. And I hear HR people going, well, go through those numbers again. If you can't follow that number set, you're going to have trouble. Anyway, I'm sorry to cut off, but Alan, congratulations, Alan. I hope you got the PE value in your retirement package. And I'm not trying to slam Coke, but it's data. We've gone to HR people and they'll shut up. We show them that data. You're trading at a 20% discount. And they, I'm not going to share that with the executives. They'll get upset. Are you nuts? The best executives look at us and go, you don't think I know that? Of course I know that. My KPIs, my 401k, I'm discounted. If you can't help me fix that, you're not going to come visit with me. That's the mindset, JP. But that's the mindset. And it's just such a different way to think about the analytics and the HR value.
I think you're right. We have, for years, talked about the HR people need to think more like business people. And it's a challenge, right? Because a lot of people come to the field, they're more humanistic. They're coming from that people perspective, and they're a little bit afraid of seeing a P&L and the numbers. But the reality is, and Dave, you talked about in the first podcast you're on, you don't need to be fluent in French to go to France. But you should be fluent enough to order coffee, find the restroom. And that's what HR people need to figure out, is how to do that. And I frankly think there's a huge need in our field to help people, because we're talking about the knowing doing gap. I can read this article. It's a great article. I can listen to this podcast. I could take courses, but I still, like, let's say for tennis, I play tennis. I love it. I'll watch tennis lessons. I'll watch people talk about how I can get better, but I still get a coach because I'm still need someone to kind of help me go through it sometimes. And that's the role that a consultant plays. So I think there's more we need to do on business acumen and coaching actively, especially younger HR professionals. We need more people coming in from MBAs, different perspectives, because that is what HR really is about, is creating impact and making business impact.
Now, the other thing you might want to think about is separating HR and talent management. It could be that talent management professionals need to be more like what David's talking, because the solution to succession planning is for the C-suite to do things differently. I have to have the chutzpah to stand in front of 750 IQ achievers and say, we are going to change the way we talk about talent. We are going to change the way we assess. You have to have the codats to do that. Now, David has a different piece to that. That is, one of the ways that I would be more successful is I have to beat business. So the reason I'm going to have you do 10 hours more work on the annual talent review is that it'll increase margin. And here's how it's going to do that. Here's the mechanism. So I think we have a major problem that is, am I strong enough to stand in front of seven people who aren't interested in what I'm there to talk about and convince them to do something significantly different? And then the second issue is David's issue. That is, in order to do that, I have to be a business person. Now, HR, I think, is less so. All of the things David said would help an HR be successful. But I think it's particularly critical for talent.
Let's talk more about talent management professionals, because in the article, you talk about some gaps around knowledge and capabilities that you think need to be addressed.
It is frustrating to Alan and David and I how little they know about the research. Alan said it's not a science-based function. We all have read 500 studies in order to be thought leaders. And we continue to be called into companies and say, here's the best practice. And people in the audience don't know the background of why I'm saying that. They say, well, this isn't Bob's opinion. This is the opinion of 42 studies. Have you read any of these? No, no, we have not. I say, well, then you either need to believe everything I say or read it yourself. I personally have found the average head of talent to be less prepared now than in the past.
Bob, I have a little bit of a different take. My take is that coming out of grad school, somebody who got a PhD in IO psych, so I've read the papers and enjoyed that type of stuff. We don't make it accessible enough. The academic journals, they have paywalls. You have to pay money. It could be $30 for one journal article, which is ridiculous. So that's tough. And then you've got so many vendors, frankly, that are pushing a point of view that has zero research. It's a study. They asked 100 people, and they're now telling this is fact. And that's our problem. We need to find where the truth is, and I think we got to make it more accessible. But there's just more needed in our field of, like, what is the truth? How do you find it? How to make it even simpler? And I'd really appreciate what, you know, Dave, you do every day on LinkedIn. You post and share information almost every day in every comment. I don't know how you find time to do all that. It's amazing. But you're always sharing your research. And I think hopefully this podcast, we're pointing people the right way, breadcrumbs. Like, go check out, Bob, your site and what you guys are doing. Look at what Alan's done. Because it's there for the taking. And I think the talent management professionals that actually do the homework will differentiate themselves. But the challenge is sometimes the CHROs don't even know what the research says. And so they can't assess the right people either because they're looking at it from a different lens. So we've got an accessibility issue around how we get people out in front and see what really matters and what that research is in a very simple way.
Many people who are okay in talent tell me they're afraid to present this stuff to the C-suite because they might get a question. That is, they can go ahead and repeat what Bob said or what Alan said to do or what David said to do. But if somebody says, well, why would we do that? They do not know the 10 studies.
They do. I also think a challenge that we kind of touched on too in the paper is that talent management is not really seen as a specialty, in my opinion. It's seen as a developmental experience for a lot of HR people. And it's seen as cool, right? And so a lot of companies put people through TM that are HR background instead in readiness for a CHRO job. So it's almost like they're doing talent management on talent management or on HR. And I think that's great for those people to get exposure. And I've worked with a lot of them and they've gone on to be super successful CHROs. So that's great. But if you don't have someone in the TM function who's senior enough and knows what we're talking about, whether they're running it or they're the number two underneath this person who's coming through, you have flavor of the month. You have the cover of HBR is the topic of the next 6 months, right? Whatever it is. And even if it's good stuff, it's going to change when the next one comes, right? So it's going to change with the next CHRO, the next CEO, or even the next head of talent is going to come in and say, well, I'll do things differently because I want to have a feather in my cap for having brought curiosity in, right? Or whatever it is. That's always a great one. But growth mindset, Bob, is another one where people say they confuse it with learning agility. They confuse it with some other things. Growth mindset's wonderful. Just because you want to be an astronaut, if you're 50 years old, you're probably not going to be one, right? I mean, you're just like, let's face it, you're not going to be a hypo just because you want it. I think there is a challenge sometimes with HR people thinking TM is easy and I can read a couple of things in pop articles and I know the answer. And I think that's why they miss the science and they don't believe, in my opinion. I think there's a piece of that.
Let me be wise and encourage you to talk to Robert. He called me David three times, so I'm going to call him Robert three times. I'm going to share a quick story. I think the story captures it. We're working with a retail firm, big retail firm. Doesn't matter who, it could be any of them. They did the research. The average basket size is $40. They put $40 in the basket. In stores that have a higher, whatever index you want, employee, organization, people, this human, I call it human capability, their average basket size is 50. $100 billion. Pick up a number. That was the number. The executive went in, talent management, head of HR went in and said, we could go from 100 to 125 billion if we increase the quality of people and organization. The executive said, wow, that's pretty good data. They bought it. And so instead of her going in and saying, I'd like $500,000 to run a leadership program, she said, I want to increase our revenue 25%. They said, I don't believe 25%. This is where I get less rigorous about rigor. Good. We'll increase it 12 billion. They gave her $1 billion. Step one in analytics for me, build the case. Step two, and this is the one that Alan, you and Bob, and I'm still struggling with this. She said, great. I don't just have 500,000 to build a training program. I got $1 billion. Where do I spend it? We ought to have a discipline that says with some, I sat on the airplane next to somebody from this firm, so I'm going to go do a skills-based thing and spend $20 million. Well, that's asinine. I just read a great book by a guy named Eichinger. I'm going to go do learning. That's stupid as well. Do we in our field have a discipline to say, now that I've got your attention and some resource, of the 10 or 12 talent initiatives, is it hiring people? Is it training people? Is it pay? Is it DEI? Is it communication? Is it engagement? Where should I spend that money to get the biggest bang for the buck? To me, that's one of the questions I think we face going forward. And when she asked us that, we said, don't come to that with seat of the pants ideas. Come to that with rigor, with science. And she did. And said, here's where I think I could spend the money that would get the most impact. So that story for me captures kind of what we're looking at. Talent management requires judgment, no question. I don't know if it requires precision. Are they going to get $12 billion for $1 billion invested? I don't know. Maybe they're only going to get 9.3. That's irrelevant. It's a great return. Where are you going to invest the money? And that's not best practice, because what another store did may not be what you do. How do I guide my store and my stores to get the value that I want? That's the kind of work that we're in the middle of trying to figure out.
I love this, guys. Great conversation. Now, I finish all podcasts with one final question, and that is, what is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
HR or talent?
You want to say future of talent. Bob, for you, I will change it.
Talent, as we all know, we all have a slide that says change is constant and change, the pace of change is increasing. TM has to keep up with change in what kind of leadership is required to flourish in the future. We believe it's going to be more competitive. It's going to be geopolitical more than it ever has before. It's going to be global. It's probably going to be planetary when we find out there are people on the moons of Jupiter. So TM has to grow unbelievably fast to keep up with what's going on in the marketplace.
Thank you, Bob. Well, I'm looking forward to interplanetary assessments and travel for that. It'd be great. Alan, how about you?
Yeah, I'll build on Bob's comment there. And I think this will tie for you, Bob. My phrase is insights driven. And whether that's data driven, business metrics driven, to Dave's point, or even AI and the role of AI. I know we didn't talk about that today, but I think there's a lot out there about what's real and what's not yet with AI. But regardless, AI is going to produce data and information and insights that's going to drive a lot of HR, a lot of talent, a lot of the business too. And I think understanding and being able to leverage insights and knowing what's good data, what's bad data is key. And it's insights, Bob, to your point, knowing what the future of talent wants, how they're evolving. It's insights around the business, Dave, and what metrics are going to drive what elements, what decisions will change the future of the business and drive growth or expansion or whatever. It's all insights based.
I agree. Thanks, Alan. Insights based. Dave, for you.
What would yours be, JP, before I get to speak? What would yours be? You've had so many podcasts.
I did actually say this in episode 60, where I got interviewed as the guest. And for me, the future of HR is all about AI, but not the AI you're thinking about, Dave. Authentic influence. I think, like, it's pretty good. But the reality, I do think, is that we are coming into our own, and HR's got to be authentic to what our core of what we do, which is driving the business through people and having more influence. And I think the more we do that, we'll have that come through. So that's my play on AI.
My answer would be amen to Bob Change, amen to Insight, amen to whatever AI means today. But I'm going to add two-word phrases. First two words, so that. I believe the value in the future is not what we do. And the second two-word phrase is so that value is created. If we aren't doing change that creates value or insights that create value or AI augmented, artificial, authentic intelligence that creates value for others. For me, it's customers, it's investors, it's communities, not just employees. So for me, so that value creation.
Beautiful. Dave, Bob, Alan, thank you so much for being on The Future of HR. This was an awesome episode. Awesome conversation.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR podcast. Thanks again to Dave, Bob, and Alan for sharing their perspectives on how we can improve and elevate talent management. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe, share our podcast with at least one other person, or even better, leave a review on Apple or Spotify podcasts. This really helps us to grow the podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. We'll be back next week with Kelly Monahan. Dr. Kelly Monahan is a managing director at Upwork, leading their Future of Work research program. Her research has been recognized and published in both applied and academic journals, including MIT Sloan Management Review and Journal of Strategic Management. In 2018, Kelly released her first book, How Behavioral Economics Influences Management Decision-Making, A New Paradigm. And in my conversation with Kelly, we'll be talking about what has changed about work and what has stayed the same based on her research, why she believes leadership has to change in the future, and how we should be thinking about upskilling both blue-collar and knowledge workers in the age of AI, and much, much more. This was a great conversation with Kelly and one that you won't want to miss. Thanks again for listening to The Future of HR and being part of our community.